And this is also reminding me, I wanted to thank you. I was really touched by the piece that you did with Derek Trucks after the passing of Butch Trucks. It was essentially you interviewed him and then they pulled out all of his content.
It was basically in Derek's words, which I felt is as it should have been. And it was really powerful for myself. Derek was, you know, he was still dealing with it. We only spoke about 4 days after Butch had passed, and he hadn't been home to see the family yet. They were on tour. He found out on the road, and then apparently that night, he and Susan went out with the band and played, I think they were in St. Louis, and they played Statesboro Blues, opened with it, and then did In Memory of Elizabeth Reed. So he was, in many ways, he was still processing the loss, you know, the way Butch went tragically. And, but he, the thing that was beautiful about it was the way that he spoke about Butch as a driving force, not just in the Allman Brothers, but in Derek's life as a musician, as blood, as his nephew, and, you know, what he really meant, what he left behind in the music and in the band with the Allmans above and beyond, and, you know, just the simple tragic loss of him not being here anymore. That music just resonates. We've been talking about this all morning with Chuck Berry and David Bowie. You know, we lose them, but we never lose them because the music is always still here.
David Frick talking about Derek Trucks and the loss of his uncle Butch Trucks of the Allman Brothers Band. David's liner notes adorn this beautiful package. Live from the Fox Oakland, there is a DVD counterpart to this. And on KUTX, it's the Tedeschi Trucks Band with Austinite. Ephraim Owens, Hall of Famer now, on trumpet in the horn section.
Thank you.
Susan Tedeschi, Derek Trucks, and their enormous band, including Austinite Ephraim Owens on trumpet, who was inducted into the Hall of Fame and won Best Horn Player at the Austin Music Awards last Sunday, and a version of Bobby Bland's I Pity the Fool, the liner notes on the record done by my guest David Frick of Rolling Stone and Sirius XM, and there's a video accompaniment to this.
There's a concert documentary. That whole, it was all that show, the film and the album, was one night in September of last year at the Fox Oakland, an amazing theater in Oakland, California. And there's actually a scene in there in which I'm interviewing Derek and Susan on the radio at Sirius XM. It's like a hall of mirrors in here right now.
Actually, at our house, when we watch a rock doc, it's a 50-50 chance that David Frick will be the talking head during it.
I don't plan it that way, trust me.
We applaud and we pass the popcorn. Nice work there. 10 minutes after 12 noon, Robin Hitchcock has made his way through the Austin traffic and will join us in a moment. The KUTX South By coverage is supported by Austin laser dentist Helen Ragsdale and Independence Brewing Company, serving Austin's independent drinkers and thinkers. Don't go anywhere. We're only halfway through this fun.
Support comes from St. Edward's University graduate programs in business management, leadership and change, and accounting. Evening and Saturday classes. Information session Wednesday, March 22nd. Registration at stedwards.edu/grad.
Support comes from Austin Rocks, a lifestyle boutique offering music-inspired fashion for men, women, and kids, featuring Austin City Limits apparel and locally designed gifts. Downtown Austin at 2nd and Guadalupe. More at austinrockstexas.com.
What's real? Is that real? Is this real?
Just don't know what's real.
It's so hard to tell. How could I be sure?
It's not real. It's real. It's not real. It's real. It's not real. It's real.
I know it's difficult to know what's real, but KUTX plays real music. It's true. Let us be your musical spirit guides as we journey through the many dimensions of the Austin music experience. KUTX has a membership drive coming up March 29th. When you make your donation, you'll enter into the realm of musical truth that now more than ever will set your spirit free. Make sure that the music flows like wisdom through your third eye and through your third ear. Learn more and make your offering at KUTX.org.
This is 98.9 KUTX Leander, KUTHD 2 90.5 Austin, and KUTX.org. Community-supported public radio from UT Austin.
Support comes from Rodeo Austin with their Family Carnival, March 11th through the 25th. Rides, Ferris wheels, funnel cakes, and more. All to help send kids to college. Tickets now available at RodeoAustin.com, where weird meets Western.
KUTX 98.9, our South By wrap-up show, began this morning at 10. This is Jody Denberg. I was joined at 10 by David Frick of Rolling Stone and Sirius XM. And now we are reunited with our friend who co-hosted the show with us in 2013, the great Robin Hitchcock. I would say good afternoon, but I would think it's more like morning for you, or?
It's certainly morning for me here in Austin, Texas. Jody, hello. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. I was trying to think, how many events has Robin done since South By began? Can you even give me a guesstimate on how many things you've done during the festival so far in terms of performing, interviewing, and the like?
The first one I came to was in 1993. So I guess this is probably about my 10th. I mean, not nearly as many as either of you, I think. But I've been here a lot, yes.
What about this particular trip?
Oh, gosh. I didn't do anything at the beginning, and then it just got thick and intense, you know. I must have done about 5 or 6 appearances. And, you know, things are now, there's so much online stuff.
Yeah, we filmed a video with you yesterday that will be appearing online, I think, on Monday. So I look forward to that.
There's 2 songs from my new record, upcoming record. Yeah, which will be on your... So they'll be on your, like, online...
KUTX.org.
Yeah. Lovely. Let us know, and I will fire it out via social media, which is obviously how I spend all my spare time now. All the quality time I had for emails has now been displaced by social media.
The same here. It's just, it overwhelms you. The new album, you came up with an amazing title for.
Well, you mean Robin Hitchcock?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, technically, I suppose my parents did, but yeah.
I think it's your 21st solo record. Yeah.
Wow.
I counted them up. And so the record comes out in April.
Yes.
There's a lag time, though, in between when you record the record and when it comes out. And it's sort of sitting there. You're familiar with it. I have a copy, but most people haven't heard it. So I thought we would play a song. Where did you record the new album and who did you do it with?
This record was recorded in Nashville, Tennessee, with Brendan Benson producing and largely engineering it. And but that was probably all finished by about a year ago.
Let's hear the first single from the album, and then we'll talk some more with Robin Hitchcock, and he's got some music he's picked out for us. This song is called I Want to Tell You About What I Want. It's new and currently unreleased. Robin Hitchcock on KUTX.
You think I'm a thug? I hear you thinking I'm a thug, sentimental like a thug. Well, I lack the physique, but yes, sir, it's a brutal try. Die for pearls in the train and hold dying competitions. Who can squirt blood furthest into the mouths of our cannibal overlords? I want to tell you about what I want. I want to tell you about. Think I'm ungenerous? Really? In what way? The more you give someone, the more they want from you. Rubbish people is fun. It's second to none in the joy that it brings to the self-righteous mind. Ah. Socialism, no machismo. And the only God should be the God of L-O-V-E. I want a non-invasive kind of telepathy that lets you feel what it's like to be somebody else. Feel what it's like to be somebody else. I want to tell you. And the machines come up to heaven 24/7. But 8 billion zeros is still zero if you've got no heart. I want to tell you about what I want. I want. We'll be right back.
Some folks that had some things they had to communicate. The Beatles from Revolver, I Want to Tell You. Robin Hitchcock, I Want to Tell You About What I Want, from the forthcoming album, Robin Hitchcock. And the man himself is here with me and David Frick. And wow, your record sounded great.
Thank you very much. The bass sounds particularly good, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. John Estes on bass. I mean, the whole thing was beautifully recorded. And well mastered, too.
And you had the gumption to let us follow your song with a Beatles song with some nice bass work on it.
Well, the thing is that basically I am a great lost Beatle. The Beatles worked by extension, you know, because you had Beatle John, Beatle Paul, Beatle George, Beatle Ringo. Therefore, you gentlemen being about my age will remember that you would have been Beatle Jody, Beatle David, and so on, you know. And so as Beatle Robin, which is one of the briefs that I had when I went into making music, I've always tried to make songs that they're not as good as what was on Revolver, but it's that genre. You know, if I'm playing with a rock band, not if I'm playing an acoustic, making an acoustic record, but if I've got two guitars, bass, drums, which is what we had in the really early Soft Boys, and, you know, it's the template, Big Star, the Velvet Underground, the Byrds, the Fabs, many more. But if I'm working in that genre, I like to feel it could have been an outtake from Revolver, you know, and so I put myself up against it. I always lose, but, you know, it's something to have, something to aim at and miss, you know.
So you had a song years ago called Beatle Dennis. Did that tie into this whole thing about everyone being a Beatle of sorts?
Yeah, that was a Beatle song. I mean, yeah. You know, it had Glenn Tilbrook on it, and, you know, we would, we did it by post. We weren't in the studio at the same time, but the same principle was you got Beatle Glenn and Beatle Robin, so it's Beatle Dennis.
So when Sean Lennon recently turned on to your music, apparently looking at social media, it seemed like it was a discovery for him at this point, and then you guys hung out a bit. Did you get the vibe that he was like, oh, I can relate to this guy because he's Beatley, and plus Sean likes psychedelia in general?
Yeah, you know, he's a man of taste, and I saw the show they did, and they started with Astronomy Domini, you know, Pink Floyd, Sid Barrett, which was, again, I played that in my art school band 50 years ago. You know, we did it in the Soft Boys. I've been playing that practically since the Floyd stopped playing it. And they finished the set with Tomorrow Never Knows by Sean's dad, John. So, I you know, he's clearly, he has various fields, but he's in that, he likes that sort of stuff. So he's another fellow, what do they call it now, psych. John is now a sort of psych dude, I suppose. Sean, yeah.
When I like to follow you on Twitter, which is my only social media, David has refrained to this point. We'll see how that...
I am Mr. No Social Media. My idea of social media, come up to me in a record store at a gig and I'll talk.
My friend, you write for a national magazine, an overseas magazine. You're on a national radio station. That's your social
media.
That's
enough writing for one day.
But I follow Robin and Emma, Robin's partner. And, you know, we all express some... what is the word? NUI? Anxiety about current events and such. Which Robin must remove from his social media soon, since he would like to live here. I don't think anyone's listening that would get us in trouble.
Only the entire world, yeah, you know.
But there's a new song that you have called I Pray When I'm Drunk, and I wanted to play that, and I was wondering if it was motivated by current events or where the song came from.
I wrote the song in Norway or Germany, and I just realized that I did actually pray when I was drunk. I don't belong to any denomination, but that in an uninhibited state, I would actually start asking whatever it is for certain things.
It's sort of like the Church of Beaujolais.
There was a Church of Beaujolais. It loosens me up enough to start praying, which I think I would never do as a rational, sober person. So maybe that's just what it says about religion, you know. But
yes, well, they do have wine in the sacrament.
They do. I mean, you know,
they were on that from Jump Street.
It's the spirituality via intoxication thing, I suppose, really. But I'm a great believer in prayer, in magic, in you know, envisaging, manifesting.
KUTX 98.9, The Byrds, from an album called Younger Than Yesterday, Time Between. And I opened the CD booklet to see who wrote the liner notes, and it's our guest David Frick, who wrote those in 1996. And our other guest, Robin Hitchcock, I Pray When I'm Drunk, from his forthcoming album, simply entitled Robin Hitchcock. The country feel there, Robin, not the first time you've had that feel. You've worked with Gillian Welch and Dave Rawlings. But the country feel and I Pray When I'm Drunk, is that because you soaked up some of Nashville since moving there?
Actually, no, I wrote it before I moved to Nashville, but I wanted to have a little bit of little bit of Nashville ease on the record. There's some pedal steel on the record as well by Russ Paul, Whom, of course, I got from my partner Emma Swift. Russ plays on Emma's record, as does Annie McHugh, who is the other guitarist on my record. So I just my record is like looking at my life, my old life in Britain, but it's through the prism. That's you know, a refracted light thing, not a jail. Through the hard thing to say on the radio, through the prism of Nashville. So I've got a few references to Nashville in there.
And the Birds track that followed Time Between seemed part and parcel with Robin's song.
Well, that's an interesting track because it was Chris Hillman's first original song ever.
Wow.
And it was also the first time that Clarence White, the guitar player, played with the Birds. He was a session guitarist at the time in L.A. And it features that invention, the B-bender, that he and Gene Parsons, who also eventually joined the Birds, created to get that sort of pedal steel crying sort of elastic sound on a Fender Telecaster. And I found out in interviewing Marty Stewart, Johnny Cash's former guitar player and a great solo artist, he owns the original B-bender guitar. And he plays it all over his current album, Way Out West. So it's like this thing that started one day in December of 1966 has just refracted through the prism of, you know, just country music, rock, pop, everything that just keeps developing over and over and cycling around, but cycling around in new ways. It just, country rock started a lot earlier than people think, and it's still a lot more interesting than I think people think.
Well, I mean, even the Beatles, some of the first Ringo tracks, like
Act Naturally, Buck Owens.
Yeah.
He was covering Bakersfield.
Right. That was made in like 65 or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So arguably Ringo actually got there before Chris
Ringo's
Hillman.
Ringo's there first all the time.
Amen to that. Well, we left off with the Birds. We're going to pick up with Bob Dylan. And actually here on the University of Texas campus tomorrow, the curator of the new Bob Dylan archive, Michael Chaikin, is going to host a 50th anniversary viewing of Don't Look Back. That's here on the UT campus tomorrow. And Tuesday, there will be a panel discussion looking forward by looking back about Bob Dylan. You know, with the passing of Chuck Berry, I was just thinking how elemental his music was. You couldn't break it down. It was the building block. Now, folk rock was a hybrid at that point, but now it just seems like a building block as well. Listening to that Bird song, it just seems like you can't really break it down to folk and rock. It's one thing. Dylan is Dylan, and we can't categorize him. But
don't forget, this next Dylan track was cut in Nashville.
And
with Nashville session men as well as
Al Kooper.
Yes.
Now, Robin, does Al live in Nashville? Do you know?
No, Al lives in Boston now. And in fact, joined me for my birthday gig a couple of weeks ago. We had a Hammond B3 taken down to the gig, and Al just had an operation. It was the first time he'd been out, but he was just very keen to get back to work, so back to playing. So he came down, and we did three songs off Blonde on Blonde as the encores, which was a hell of a birthday present to me.
Wow. And you have released an album of entirely Dylan covers that I have, which I love. It was a live record, might have been a bootleg of sorts, but it came from you.
It was released because I had so many Dylan songs recorded already, not because I decided to make it, but I had a double album's worth of me performing Dylan songs. Yeah.
Which I really appreciate. And usually when we see Robin play, we'll get an Obviously Five Believers.
Well, you did Obviously Five Believers at the Bowery Ballroom when
Yola
I saw
Tango.
You with Yola Tango on March 1st.
That was a brave choice. That was theirs, but I think we got away with
it. You nailed it.
You have to come in on the first beat of each verse. You know, and then you come straight in. But they managed to, they were able to play Charlie McCoy's harmonica part, which was way beyond me. I mean, you know, on the bass and guitar.
So on your birthday, just a few weeks ago, when you played with Al Kooper, what were the songs that you played?
We did Visions of Johanna, which I've obviously been doing for years. We did Just Like a Woman with Emma Swift and I duetting on it. And then Al and I managed to play Sad-Eyed Lady of the Lowlands, just. But he also set me right on the chords. I had no idea, you know, I been playing it a certain way for ages, and he said, no, it's an E minor. That's the second chord's an A, and I thought it, you know, that made a huge difference. But it was just, extraordinary going through these songs with Al and him rediscovering them as well, you know.
Well, this stuff is going to live forever. And as I mentioned, events on the University of Texas campus the next 2 days, including a 50th anniversary viewing of Don't Look Back. You mentioned Just Like a Woman. The Cutting Edge Bootleg Series Volume 12 has everything ever recorded between 1965 and 1966, which is a bit much for me, but scholars are having a blast.
The scholar is having a blast.
Mr. Frick.
Have you heard it all, David?
Yes.
Wow.
It's, you know, it takes a few days, but, you know, you could spend your time doing a lot worse than sitting around listening to all of Bob Dylan's recordings from 65 and 66.
Well, and Robin, you mentioned Just Like a Woman. There's several alternate versions on that box, and we've chosen take 8 of Just Like a Woman, and we should listen for Mr. Al Kooper on this, right?
He's on it, but he's not actually playing it. It obviously, I don't know over what period the takes were done, but it's very different from the one that actually came out. It hasn't got that keyboard descent, which is a big feature of, you know, da, da.
It's almost like raining. Church bells,
yeah,
sort of
that,
descending church
there's
bells.
There's that little yeah. guitar figure, which Al said he was thought was done by Charlie McCoy, and then, you know, it's very formalized. This is still protean. It's,
well, the thing about that set is you can actually hear the arrangements changing and morphing to the final form.
Yeah. Do you kind of... Oh.
Nobody can complain. Tonight as I stand inside the rain, everybody knows the baby's got new clothes, but lately I see her ribbons and her bows are falling from her curls. She waits just like a woman. Yes, then she makes mistakes just like a woman. Yes, and she aches just like a woman. But she breaks just like a little girl. Queen Mary, she is my friend. Yes, I believe I'll go see her again. Nobody has to guess the baby can't be blessed till she sees finally that she's like all the rest, with her fog, her amphetamine, and her pearls. And she wakes just like a woman. Yes, she makes mistakes just like a woman. Yes, then she aches just like a woman. But she breaks just like a little girl. From the first, and I was dying of thirst, so I came in here. And your long time curse hurts, but what's worse is now this pain in here. I can't stay in here. Ain't it clear? Well, just can't fit. Yes, I believe it's
time for us to quit. But when we meet again and are introduced by friends, please don't let on that you knew me when I was heavy and hungry in your world. You ache just like a woman. Yes, you take just like a woman. Well, you ache just like a woman. But you break just like a little girl.
Ending chord there. The Grateful Dead on KETX's South by wrap-up show. I'm Jody Denberg here with Rolling Stone's David Frick and Mr. Robin Hitchcock. The Golden Road to Unlimited Devotion, the Grateful Dead's first song on their first album. Earlier, David, we played from the Velvet Underground and Nico, which was celebrating its 50th birthday, this record as well.
The first Velvet Underground record and the first Grateful Dead record were released in the same week. Just talk about polar opposites. And also how Lou and the Velvets really had a major antipathy for San Francisco for so long, until they ended up playing at the Matrix in 1969 and actually discovering that people there were actually a lot cooler than they thought. But the first Dead album was released just this past Friday, March 17th, 1967, 50 years ago.
And now there's a new 50th anniversary reissue with an extra disc of a concert from Vancouver, BC. We heard Bob Dylan's Take 8 complete of Just Like a Woman from the Cutting Edge Bootleg Series Volume 12. I want to mention that tomorrow at 3:30, there's a 50th anniversary viewing of D.A. Pennebaker's Don't Look Back here in this very building at the Belo Center. And Tuesday, there is a panel discussion in the Texas Union Theater, Tuesday night, 7 to 8:30. Robin, you mentioned earlier this month on your birthday playing with Al Cooper, who plays the organ on Blonde on Blonde and on the Just Like a Woman. Al played the organ. Who played the piano?
Well, according to Al, it was Pig Robbins, Hargus Pig Robbins, who's a blind man who played all, I think he played all the keyboard, all the piano on Blonde on Blonde. So that's him, you know, rolling away on Pledging My Time and things.
So for you, is there a Dylan period that's the most influential, the most quintessential? Most people would say the period around Blonde on Blonde, Highway 61, etc. Or is it just everything that seeps in?
No, I'm afraid it is that period, the momentum years. But, I mean, it doesn't just apply to Bob Dylan. It applies to everybody, you know, Ray Davis, Brian Wilson, Sid Barrett, the Rolling Stones, the Velvet Underground, the whole damn lot. There was something in the air, you know, and I was just, it was when I reached puberty, like, you know, between I was me being 11 and me being 14, all this magical music came out. You know, to me, 1967 is the everlasting year. You know, we never leave it. It's no coincidence we're sitting here 50 years later saying, well, look at this. Hey, it's 50 years. Well, you know, wait till Sgt. Pepper is 50 in June. I mean, you know, the let alone the interviews that Paul and Ringo will have to do. But it's a magic zone. And those same people were not able to conjure the same kind of music even a few years later. And it's not just to do with talent. I don't know what the hell it was. But, you know, that's why I've always mined that era. I don't try and revive it, you know, but there's just something in there that
it's like a point where your conscience, your consciousness is formed. Actually, that Dead album was one of the first albums I ever bought.
Wow, the first one.
The first Dead album, the Hendrix album, Flowers by the Rolling Stone, Jefferson Airplane, Surrealistic Pillow. I bought them all in like maybe a 4, 5, 6 month period, and they were among the first 10 albums I ever bought. So if people say, well, you talk about this stuff, you know, all the time, and I go, well, I was there. You know, it's like the one thing that I have that so many people just can't have is that when I heard Purple Haze for the first time, it was a brand new record on the radio.
Yeah.
You can't replicate that exposure again. It'll be the first time for somebody, but this was the first time it was in the world.
Well, and we're grooving on it to this day.
And you learn from it. Even if you weren't there, learn from the precedent, learn from that experience, and learn that if you're going to do this, you have a lot to measure up to. And if you're willing to go there, then everyone will benefit.
But I'm game for the reissues, but if Sgt. Pepper's going to come out and they're going to somehow add to it Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane, which I realize are valid in terms of when the sessions were and were originally intended for it, I have trouble with that. I don't want to put on Sgt. Pepper and hear those two songs anywhere next
to. Are they going to?
I had read that.
Back on.
I had read that. Perhaps it's a bonus disc. Perhaps it hasn't been decided, but I have read that.
The obverse, if there is such a word of that, is that, you know, you can ignore that part of it. Just stay with the holy text. It still tells you things. At one point I got a copy of Axis Bold as Love in mono. It was a reissue on vinyl, and I put it on, and it was like I was hearing the record again for the first time. It wasn't the mono, it was just like the density of ideas and imagination, and it was like, okay, I can go back to a record that I knew when it came out and still learn from it. And I think that's true, you know, if you hear Shakespeare again, or a different production, you know, say, you see Coriolanus, and it's done as if it was staged in 1930s Mussolini, Italy. You get a whole different frame of reference with the same language.
I would be happier, though, if any bonus tracks came on a separate disc, although I realize I could program, as I wish, the original.
Well, I would think that they would probably keep the original. I don't think you could put bonus tracks
after a day in the life?
No, you can't. No. You've already been, as I said about Lift to Experience, you've been to the top of the mountain.
Yes.
You know, everything else is downhill.
I'm looking forward to Shakespeare's bonus tracks.
I would like to play a song by our mutual friend Kelly Hogan.
Yes.
She will be here April 29th when Alejandro Escovedo, Peter Buck, Scott McCoy and company play the Paramount Theater. She had a record a few years ago called I Like to Keep Myself in Pain. Is the title track, is that your composition?
I wrote that specially for Kelly Hogan, or Hogan as she calls herself.
And we were off mic talking about grooving, and I thought we would groove through a few tunes, and I don't really know the genesis of that word and how it relates to the way we use it now, but I'd imagine it comes from the 60s.
I'm sure it comes from, you know, jazz cats and bebopping, and I'm sure blues people were talking like that.
Well, I've got Kelly Hogan in the CD player with a song called Dusty Groove.
Even in an evening gown, you always got your sleeves rolled all the way down. Messages you wrote were to be read along, a laundry list in a clenched fist never meant to be shown. Can you read my mind? Then how was my day today? Ask the river to divide. What does the river of bone, like a lightning strike, ran down the line, shot up your spine like a shorted out mic. Let the poor girl be. All the while, that winning smile, pale and still draining, snow white's blackout fire underneath your sweater, 10 fingers all red. I bequeath this gold map of the stars to the living dead. A little songbird singing inside my head, smack down on the sofa, breakfast in bed. Swallow the sky, swallow the sea, number one with a bullet, no you can't kill me. Let the poor girl be.
Go out on the highway, throw myself a ride. Too long in New York City, my mind is taking a ride. I wanna go back to Texas. Cowgirls play. I want to have some fun in a good old Texas way. Down in Groovy's Paradise, Groovy's Paradise, Groovy's Paradise. I told you one or two times, I ain't gonna tell you no more. Long in Detroit City, oh, I can't hardly breathe no more. I need a whole lot of cold pearl beer and a lovely Texas smile. Groove, you drive your truck through, maybe wider than a Texas mile. Down in Groover's Paradise, Groover's Paradise, Groover's Paradise.
Gentlemen, it was all I could do to not pull out the Rascals grooving on a Sunday afternoon, but we grooved there. And you know, during South by Southwest, there's so much else going on besides the music. I welcome the times when it's just all about the music, and that's what that set was. Started with Kelly Hogan from the album I Like to Keep Myself in Pain, a song that Robin Hitchcock wrote. Perhaps we shouldn't elaborate on that too much. I Like to Keep Myself in Pain. Oh,
it's what I don't know. She asked me for a song for her record, and that's what I wrote. And I just thought, I remember her in a band called the Jody Grind many years ago. And I just was thinking of the songs she sang then, mostly which were covers. And if they did Daniel Johnston and lots of things. And I just, the phrase "I like to keep myself in pain" was what came to mind, you know, just in terms of like what she likes to sing, you know.
And the song was Dusty Groove. Do we say Booker T was?
Booker T played keyboard on that one, apparently, on that session. Yeah,
sounded great. I would be remiss if we didn't give some love to our late friend, the great Doug Somm of the Sir Douglas Quintet. It was last South by, I believe, when there was all this crowdfunding and stuff going on for the documentary about Doug, which was completed and has made the rounds of film festivals. From 1974's Groover's Paradise, that song, and Robin Hitchcock from Goodnight Oslo, Saturday Groovers. So the genesis of this word groover, David, you think it goes back to jazz?
Well, Groovin' High was a Dizzy Gillespie composition recorded in 1945 with Charlie Parker. And obviously, I'm pretty much guessing that the genesis of the word as slang starts with the dawn of the recording industry because records had grooves.
Right, so in the groove, actually.
You were in the groove. And grooving, and then obviously bebop lingo and, you know, and cat talk and whatever. And it just, you know, these vernacular phrases just started. So, yeah, we can at least say that, you know, one of the first prominent songs to use the word would have been Groovin' High.
We had Dusty Groove. We had Groover's Paradise. We had Robin Hitchcock going back to a record called Goodnight Oslo, Saturday Groovers. Robin, I remember our friends Ian McClagan and Ronnie Lane, they always had that, they had that line, got no time for ravers. And I guess in England, a raver would be like a groover.
Ravers definitely were British groovers. I mean, we had groovers because we had in the NME in the 70s.
The lone there was groover.
The strip, the lone groover, whose catchphrase was "Urk alor." And I've long championed that word, and I've used grooving in many of my titles. And, you know, I now live in East Nashville, which to me is a groover's paradise.
It's the capital of groove.
Well, it is. There's a tunnel that runs from Park Slope, just straight up, you know. They all come swarming out with their laptops and their thick bags.
And their lattes.
And their lattes. Me too. But did Doug Sahm coin the expression groover's paradise about Austin?
Yeah, that was his metaphor, what have you, pseudonym for Austin, Texas at that time.
Ah, wow. So we're in it.
We are.
And we're grooving. And I need to groove for about a minute because I've got a box set that has 28 CDs in it that I have to lift off the floor. So I will do that and remind you that this is the South by Southwest KUTX wrap-up show. Our coverage for South by comes from Austin Laser Dentist, Helen Ragsdale, and Independence Brewing Company, serving Austin's independent drinkers and thinkers. Give us 1 minute.
You know, the other day when you heard that KUTX host make a mistake? That was a real person.